All right, we have a wonderful guest right now. We just kind of popped by at the AASA conference, and we have Dr. Christopher Bond, who also goes by Chris, we found out, Chris and Christy here. And so, Dr. Bond, tell us a little bit more about you, the roles that you've served, and the types of districts that you've served in.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be here today. So first, I'm a recovering school superintendent. I just retired last year. I've been working in school districts that have struggled academically, sort of as a turnaround superintendent in California, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Okay. How long did you serve in those roles? How long were you in education?
So I've been in education for 32 years.
Oh, wow.
I started as a special educator.
Okay.
And then, of course, I moved into being a turnaround principal. And then I was recruited to be a superintendent to help school districts that were struggling.
Okay. And right before we kind of got on air, you were talking about you've worked, did you say the largest reservation in the country? Tell me, or you said something along those lines.
So my most recent job, I was the school superintendent on the second largest tribal community in the United States. And actually, if you take into consideration their land mass and population in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
It would be the largest. And it was a really neat experience.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more, because literacy has been your jam, right? Literacy has been really how you've been a turnaround superintendent. So tell me a little bit more about how you knew that reading was the lever that you needed to use whenever you go into school districts.
So for me, it was selfish. I hated to read. When I was in school, I struggled to read because of dyslexia, ADHD. And though I had some amazing teachers, the focus was always on memorizing vocabulary and spelling. And then I became a school teacher, and I noticed that I was trying to shame kids or demand kids to read better. And I thought if we made them read more, they would read better.
Right.
Because I was never trained as an educator other than how to do phonics. And we all know that phonics doesn't work with older age kids. I worked in high schools. Mm-hmm. In fact, many of my kids would stop coming to school because they felt ignorant and dumb because I was trying to do phonetic awareness and teach kids how to say cat and dog and things like that. And they were older kids. And it was one day I felt like I was doing an injustice to kids. So I went back to college to learn how to teach literacy.
Okay. When you think about leading the science of reading and leading literacy initiatives, what are the things that you think about as a superintendent in terms of leading others to be those types of teachers?
I think, first of all, even though we have the science of reading out there, we're still doing things the way we did it 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of rote memorization. We're doing a lot of vocabulary development. We're doing a lot of things like purchasing these very expensive programs. And when they don't work, then we get rid of it in the next year. So we don't have any continuity. So one of the things that I wanted to do was really simplify the process so that people could be successful in a fairly rapid time.
Uh-huh.
And also, I knew that in the districts that I usually take over are struggling financially. I mean, I took over a district that had five reading curriculums that they had purchased for that were still wrapped in cellophane on the pallets.
Oh, wow.
And they were in the process of adopting a new one. And so I went to the teachers and the educators and I said, look, pick just one. They're all science of reading. They're all research-based. They're empirical. But we can't keep buying five or six. And what I found out was, you know, these two teachers prefer this program because they've been doing it for 5 years. These three teachers have another program. It was pretty non-secured, and I needed to come up with sort of a system. And so looking at the science of reading, I really wanted to narrow down what is the thing that's going to give us the most impact. And I found that our kids, and it's logistical, believe it or not, our kids don't have fluency.
Okay.
And when I started looking at standards in various states, because I've worked in multiple states, we only start teaching fluency and measure fluency in grades 3 through 5. And I found that my high school kids didn't have any fluency skills. They didn't have, you know, the ability to read at the appropriate rates. They didn't have phrasing. They didn't have expression. They didn't have accuracy. And without those things, the brain cannot convert text into language. And language is what the brain needs to understand and comprehend. So when I started understanding the science of reading, I would create district initiatives that said, we're really going to do a district-wide initiative to focus on fluency. And I do this pretest with all my schools, and I do it and I speak at the national, which what are the four pillars of reading fluency? And I've been doing this for 17 years, and I've only had four people in 17 years be able to answer that question, which tells me they're working hard, they're passionate about what they do, but they haven't been taught how to teach, which we know now that that is one of those tenets that is going to give you the best results and best turnaround for your effort, which is teaching fluency. And then I would get some resistance because if you know, high school doesn't have any reading fluency standards in any state.
Right.
It stops at sixth grade.
That's eye-opening when you think about it.
Yeah, so it's a logistical problem. And so when I started pointing out to people where we're going to start focusing on, well, you're making us do things that aren't even in our standards. You're violating policy. You're violating state law. But then when we roll out these programs and in 9 months, we're seeing 10 to 28% growth in every classroom, every grade level, even during COVID, their eyes opened up and they're like, we never knew. And oh, by the way, this is fun. It's simple. I wrote a book on how to use karaoke to teach fluency. And I got teachers having lesson plans and kids are running to class. I have video where kids are falling, running to get to class and they're bloodied up. And I say, mijo, can I take you to the nurse? No, because today's my day to sing karaoke. The attendance rate was going up in our school. So I found right away that it was a logistical problem. It was, our teachers are smart. They're passionate.
They are, yeah.
But we're not doing anything to help them when we create policies. And I will even take it a step further. I started doing some analytical research and I found out that our reading scores, even though as poor as they are, average national average, about 36% of our kids are competent. But it's even a fifth of that in mathematics. And people ask why. Well, I asked this question and it's a logistical question. It's a logical question. How, if you have a 6-period day in high school, how many periods are you reading, writing, and listening?
Right.
Every period, right?
Yep.
How many times do you do math in a class unless you have a strong CTE program?
45 or 50 minutes, yep.
Once, and that's the only time you're going to see it. And so even though our reading literacy scores are poor, logistically our math scores are even worse because we only expose kids to it once.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so I've really been working with schools to start looking at it from a leadership point of view. Is, are we creating successful situations from leadership point of view so that teachers can be successful? Are we making sure they have the right PD? Are we making sure that we're making the science of learning and the science of reading fun? I took a bunch of Filipino teachers to the Grand Canyon because they had never been there and they had to attend a science of reading training that was mandated in our state. And so they had it on a podcast in my truck as we were driving. And it was then when I realized, I'm like, these poor people are being bored to death. They're not getting excited about it. And it was a lot for them to master. And what I wanted to do is break it down into very simple, digestible steps that are fun and engaging.
Tell us more about that piece. You mentioned that one of kind of the pillars and one of the strategies is obviously teacher professional development. And so tell us what you do that's maybe a little bit different from what other leaders across the country are doing.
This episode is brought to you by Just Right Reader. Extend phonics instruction, strengthen school-home partnerships, and accelerate reading achievement with take-home decodable packs from Just Right Reader. Personalized take-home packs make phonics fun and accessible for families. Every book comes with a video phonics lesson and writing pages to help readers reinforce their decoding and writing skills. To learn more, visit justrightreader.com.
So one of the things I do as a school superintendent, I actually host for all my school principals and cabinet a 1-week professional development every week on Wednesday for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
They come in and I teach whatever our district strategies and standards are. Something that I do quite differently than most superintendents, if you were to look at my strategic plan, it's 2 items.
Okay, what are those 2 items?
We're going to focus on reading fluency district-wide, which is accuracy, expression, phrasing, and rate. We're going to master it. And then when I get into the classrooms with the principals, we're going to be looking and giving feedback in those areas and only in those areas.
Wow.
Because we're giving feedback on 29 different items and things. So teachers are trying to do a million things and they don't do all of them as effectively as they can because it's logistically impossible. So I want to give them small digestible pieces. So the second thing is that I made a commitment with my governing board that we're going to bring fun back to education. I wrote a book called My Principal Uses the F Word. The fun word has become the new bad word in public education.
Yeah.
And so when teachers came to me and said, Dr. Bond, we want to start teaching fluency because think about it, the kids have to read the words. They have to express it. They have to read it at the appropriate rate. They have to be accurate. And it's fun. And that was what we had adopted. And I said, well, who's stopping you? And they said, we just want to know that we have your blessing. I said, absolutely. Not only did our literacy scores improve, but kids were running to get to school every day. But not only that, the teachers were having a ball.
Right.
The teachers were engaging in karaoke and the students. And guess what? Kids were reading and they were having to do it fluently. And it was exciting to see that.
I love hearing that that is one of your pillars of bringing fun back in education. We all spend, you know, teachers spend 8, 9, 10, 11 hours at work. Kids are spending 7, 8 hours at school each day. We deserve to have some fun while we're there.
Absolutely.
Tell me more, because if I'm a superintendent listening to this conversation and I hear what you're doing is you're being an instructional leader at the superintendency level, right? You are really taking it upon yourself to be the instructional leader. How do you balance all of that with just the sheer multitude of other duties that a superintendent has?
You know, that's sort of a leadership skill, because I tell my leaders all the time that not every question deserves a response, especially because a lot of that questioning is passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. And its only intention is to insult or engage you in some type of dialogue that isn't going to be effective in schools. So that's the first thing that I really work on. I want to model that to my leadership. Is not every question deserves a response.
Yep.
You need to really look at the motivation behind it. I think the second piece for me is it's got to be non-negotiable. I often will hear the term laser-like focus. I almost say you have to have an obsessive compulsive attitude. And you can't have an obsessive compulsive attitude on a plethora of things. You really have to narrow down what it is important. If you're focusing on school safety, then you really have to be obsessive compulsive about it. If you need to increase reading scores, you need to be obsessive compulsive about it. But also we really need to narrow it down, because reading comprehension and reading literacy means a lot. There's listening, there's speaking. You know, something that's very interesting is 80% of kids that fall behind in reading, even with our best intentions and the science of reading, will never, ever, ever get caught up. They will make one academic year of growth.
Right.
But they will never get caught up. 80%. If that isn't alarming to the world, so when I decided I had to pick that soapbox item that I was going to focus on, it had to be reading literacy. And then what I did is I really narrowed it down, because even when I was an educator, I could do clinics on how to write vocabulary lessons. And even with the best vocabulary lessons in the world and sustained signing reading and reading centers and groups and all that, I still wasn't getting growth.
Right.
And so I really started analyzing what is going to give me the most bang for my buck. I realized right away that I assumed that all these highly educated with master's degrees teachers knew it, because I learned it and I knew it.
Yep.
And I found out.
I made the same mistake in my leadership.
They didn't know. And it's not because they're not hardworking and passionate and dedicated to the profession.
Just because they weren't taught.
They weren't taught.
Yep.
And then the universities aren't teaching it. I actually am a professor at several universities. We're not teaching this. And we get pushback when we try to talk about really narrowing it down, because it can't be that simple. It can't be that easy. But it is.
Right.
And then I realized that the same people that are supposed to be giving good, solid feedback, encouragement, was
also
my principals. They don't know it either. Let me tell you, 17 years I pretest. What are the four pillars of reading fluency? And I've had four be able to answer that question correctly.
Wow.
And I've literally been in rooms with 2,000 people in the audience.
Wow.
If that doesn't open people's eyes, and then the flip side of it is I can share data with you.
Right.
That I've had some of the highest reading literacy score increases in the whole entire United States.
I wanted you to share some more about that, because you have the data to back up what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of cheating too, because when I take over schools, they're so low performing, their growth points are going to be accelerated.
Right.
They're exponential.
Yeah.
So when you're a school in the bottom 5% of all schools in the United States, it's not hard to move up 10
move
percentile
up.
Points.
Right.
Where if you're a school at the very top,
yes,
making a 1 or 2% growth. So I'm cheating a little bit, but I was hired, and so were several other leaders prior to me, were hired to go into these school districts, not only fix the financial situation, but increase the literacy scores, and nobody was able to do it. And yet they were buying the best merchandise in the world. They were buying the best programs in the world, but they weren't able to show growth. And what I wanted to say is that if we really focus on a few things and do them well, and I will tell you, I give credit to my teachers that embedded karaoke into my schools. because not only were kids getting to school every day and they were engaged in reading and didn't even know it, but they were coming to school every day. And that's,
that's
part of the
problem. Attendance piece. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Dr. Bond, we know that superintendents have a lot on their plates. And I'm going to ask you, and I maybe know the answer by now because you are so laser focused, but if you had to give superintendents one action item that would help them accelerate reading achievement in their schools, what would that one action item be?
So I'm going to tell you, I'll give science of reading all the credit, but the science of reading is really broad. If you really want to increase reading comprehension scores in your school, and I'm going to say it this way to illustrate it and cement it. The brain needs to convert text into language to be able to understand it. They can't understand text in isolation. It has to convert the text into language so that the brain can comprehend it. The bridge that does it with the most impact and influence, and it's empirical, is reading fluency.
All right.
Accuracy, expression, rate, and phrasing.
So moving to fluency, making sure that that's your laser-like focus, according to Dr. Bond, if you want to improve and accelerate reading achievement. Thank you so much for being with us. It was such a pleasure to meet you and hear about your journey. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. If you found this conversation valuable, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Science of Reading Leadership, Guiding Minds, Transforming Lives.